Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the May 25th, 2017 Mobile Source Committee meeting. May we have roll call, please?
On the roll for the Mobile Source Committee meeting of May 25th, 2017, Director Canepa.
Here.
Director Groom.
Present.
Director Hudson.
Here.
Director Jew.
Here.
Director Kaplan.
Here.
Director Kim.
Here.
Director Miley. Committee Vice Chair Haggerty.
Here.
Committee Chair Mitchell.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Would you all join me in standing for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okie dokie. I apologize. I was listening to the radio and they were singing, or had Billy Ray Cyrus singing Achy Breaky Heart. It's the 25th anniversary, if you can believe it, of that song. And so, of course, it's running in my head when I say okie dokie. Don't. The brain works in mysterious ways. Public comment. This is the time for anyone in our audience who wishes to address us on any item not on the agenda. Do we have any public comment speakers? We do not. Thank you. We will move on to approval of the minutes from our March 23rd meeting. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Is there any discussion? We will approve those as a unanimous vote. We will move on to item four, which is the fiscal year ending 2018 Transportation Fund for Clean Air Regional Fund Policies and Evaluation Criteria. And this will be presented by...
Good morning, Chair Mitchoff. This will be presented by Ken Mack, who is our acting supervisor, who will be leading us through this presentation.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. Good morning, Chair Mitchoff and members of the Mobile Source Committee. Today, I'll be presenting the 2018 TFCA Regional Fund Policies and proposing an amendment to the 2017 policies. Here's an overview of the presentation today. I'll begin with some background on TFCA, then go over the process for updating our policies, and finally ending with our recommendations. So for background, the Transportation Fund for Clean Air, or TFCA, is the Air District's oldest source of grant funding. Revenue comes from DMV registrations, with the Air District allocating 60% of this revenue, and the policies that you are hearing as part of this item governs the 60% portion of the fund. The other 40% is forwarded to each county as part of the Program Manager Fund, and you'll hear more about that on the next item. TFCA is one of the primary ways we fund clean air vehicle projects and trip reduction projects, which includes both shuttle and ride-sharing services, as well as bicycle projects. And each year, we review the fund's policies and bring recommendations for changes or updates to the committee and to the full board. These annual updates help us improve how our TFCA programs run. In terms of getting ready for this cycle, earlier this year, we came to a board to allocate $30 million in TFCA funds, and we're now coming to the committee to consider adoption of the policies that will govern the use of these funds for 2018. After adoption of these policies, we'll begin issuing calls for projects and phases throughout the year. For 2018, we opened the policies for public comment in January, and during this period, we also conducted outreach to solicit input from both by both hosting public workshops and speaking with stakeholders on a one-on-one basis. We use all of this input to update our policies, which are included as Attachment A and B of the staff report. And also from this process, we received six sets of public comments, which are included as Attachment C. Staff has responded to all of these comments, and our responses are also included as part of Attachment C. So based on all of the input that we received, we are proposing three revisions to the policies, which are mainly to clarify requirements. The first one for cost effectiveness. For hydrogen projects, the cost effectiveness number was accidentally removed in the current year policies, so we are putting the number back in. And I want to point out that this is the same cost effectiveness number that we've used in the past, so there's no change in that regard. We're just fixing the error of accidentally removing it. For number eight, readiness, We previously had a hard date, which is a remnant of when we used to do one call for projects. And now that we've moved to opening calls for projects in phases throughout the year, having a hard date doesn't work. So we are proposing this change to allow all project sponsors the same amount of time, or 12 months, to start their projects regardless of when they apply during the year. And finally, for policy number 32, bikeways, we are proposing a clarification on how the distance specified in this policy is being measured. So previously, there was no specific information on how the distance was measured, and so this change seeks to clarify how we'll be measuring that. So in addition to the policy revisions for 2018, we're also proposing an amendment to the current year policies. This amendment brings the revisions to the readiness policy that I just talked about in the previous slide to the current year policies. This will provide more flexibility to applicants by giving applicants who apply for programs that open later in the year, such as our charge program and our bikeways program, an equal amount of time to start their projects, or 12 months. And this gives all applicants the same amount of time to start their projects. So in closing, staff is requesting the committee recommend the Board of Directors, number one, approve the proposed fiscal year ending 2018 TFCA regional fund policies and evaluation criteria presented in Attachment A. And number two, approve the proposed amendment to the readiness policy in the 2017 TFCA regional fund policies. This concludes my presentation. I'll be happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you. Are there any questions by committee members? Ms. Kaplan?
Yes, thank you very much. Good morning, and I appreciate very much the recommendation specifically to make it work better logistically for the grant recipients in terms of not having the date be unworkable. So thank you so much for making amendments, you know, beyond just the substance of what we fund, but to make the how we fund it more logistically workable. So yay. And then I just had some questions just to verify that some of the things we talked about, whether they're eligible. You know, one of the things we discussed is that one of our biggest unused transportation infrastructure are the three empty seats in each car coming over our bridges, and our efforts to promote carpooling eligible under this fund.
We've included those efforts in a couple of different ways. One is it's always part of our Spare the Air program. It's a large portion of the work that we do there, and that funding comes from the TFCA, 60% that we get. In addition, we're also looking at, under this set of policies, pilot trip share and reduction projects. And we have also recently applied to the state for some pilot car share style projects. So innovative projects in that area is something we'll be looking at later in the year. We'll be opening a program, and those recommendations will come back to you.
Awesome. And then what about the programs to target the old heavily polluting trucks? Is that under this allocation?
So trucks are actually funded through a variety of different programs. In this program, there is a policy. There's actually two different policies that provide funding for heavy-duty trucks. Well, at least two. The first is one policy that would provide essentially some additional funding to help leverage projects in other areas. So, for example, the goods movement program, we have funding for trucks through the goods movement program, but what we've done is in TFCA also created a policy specifically for diesel trucks that would allow for cleaner diesel trucks. It's not a main priority of the TFCA program, but we do have a category that would provide funding for it. We have a whole separate category for zero-emission heavy-duty trucks. So we recognize that not all heavy-duty trucks can go to zero-emission. So again, we have one policy if they want to go to cleaner diesel, but we also have a different set of policies to help encourage trucks that can go to full zero, whether it's electric technology or hydrogen or some other form of zero-emission technology. We also have a policy for that.
Okay, and then maybe I'll just ask if I can get the documents for follow-up in terms of being able to share them with folks who are looking specifically for truck-related grant opportunities? Because it sounds like they are in multiple places. So in terms of what to share with folks, it would be great to get that. And then on the bicycle section, you know, I know bike ways are really important, but as a bicyclist and bicycle advocate, I also know that if there aren't safe places for people to park their bike, that's often an impediment. And so I just wanted to make sure, are bike stations also eligible?
Yes, actually. And so two things. In this solicitation, in these policies, we have policies specifically for electronic lockers. What's not in these policies, but there is a cost-effectiveness requirement that was approved by this board that does provide funding for other kinds of parking. And what we've done, we currently have a solicitation open today for bike. We call it the Bikeways program, but what we've done is also allowed entities to apply for bike parking through that solicitation, whether or not they apply for Bikeways. So, in other words, those funds are open today, and we'd be glad to provide information about that if you like.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to move the item.
Thank you. Second. We have a second. Anyone wishing to make any public comment on this? Any other directors wishing to make any comments? Motion and seconded. Motion by Kaplan, second by Hudson. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, no. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. We will move on to item five. And that will be fiscal year ending 2018 Transportation Fund for Clean Air, County Program Manager Expenditure Plans.
Thank you, Director Michoff. And for this presentation, Chen Feng Wang, who is the acting manager in our section, will be leading us through this presentation.
Thank you, Karen. Good morning.
Your mic isn't on. There you go.
Good morning, Chair Michoff and members of the Mobile Search Committee. During this presentation, I provide some background information on the County Program Manager, or CPM Fund, present a summary of the fiscal year ending 2018 funding allocations of the CPM Fund, then show you a summary of projects awarded by CPMs in fiscal year ending 2017, and conclude the presentation with staff's recommendations. This morning, you just heard about the 60% portion of the Transportation Fund for Clean Air, or TFC Fund. By state legislation, the remaining 40% of the TFC Fund goes to the 9 Bay Area counties through a program called the County Program Manager, or CPM Fund. This presentation focuses on the 40% portion of the TFC Fund. These funds are allocated by county program managers to projects in their own jurisdiction using air district approved policies. Each year, the 9 county program managers submit expenditure plans to the air district specifying funds available for projects in the upcoming fiscal year. These funds allocations must be approved by the air district board of directors. After board approval, the county program managers have 6 months to allocate the available funding. This slide shows a summary of the fiscal year ending 2018 funding allocations of the CPM fund. Each year, the board approves the estimated new TFC funds, which is the second column of this table shaded in blue. The amount of CPM funds passed to each of the 9 counties is determined by the amount of TFC funds originated in each county. To the right of that is a column showing funds available for reprogramming from projects that were either canceled or complete under budget. The last column is the sum of the previous two columns, which is the total funds available to each county program manager in fiscal year ending 2018. In recent meetings, the committee asked about the types of projects funded by the County Program Manager Fund. In response to that request, we are providing a list of projects that are awarded by CPM funds in fiscal year ending 2017 as attention A to the staff report for your reference. Also for your information, the CPM funds awarded in 2017 are summarized by project category in this slide. As I mentioned previously, the amount of funds passed to each of the 9 counties is determined by the number of motor vehicles registered in each county. In conclusion, staff requests that this committee recommend the board of directors approve the allocation of new fiscal year ending 2018 TFCA CPM funds listed in Table 1, totaling $9,346,053, and authorize the executive officer to enter into funding agreements with the CPMs for the total funds to be programmed in fiscal year ending 2018, listed in Table 1. This concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Are there any questions of Mr. Wong? Any public comment? May I have a motion?
Second.
Moved by Kaplan, seconded by Hudson again. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, no. Motion carries unanimously. All right, we're on a roll this morning. Okay. No, because I know we're all very busy, and we're on to item 6, which is the update on the regional efforts to deploy electric vehicles and infrastructure.
So good morning, Chair Mitchell. This is an item that stems from a presentation we had earlier in the year, where we wanted to kind of give the board a general picture of where we are in the region with electric vehicles, and then invite some of our partners to let you know some of the things that are happening outside of the Eyre District efforts. Karen Skolnick will lead us to the presentation this morning.
So will you be discussing about our efforts to maybe get some chargers in this building? Because this is really getting ridiculous.
I'm happy to answer questions if we can.
Well, that's a question.
Okay. We were assured that there would be 4 chargers installed here by the end of August.
Of what year?
This year.
You know, I'm just going to tell you, my county's almost all electric.
I got you.
And doesn't take them long to put in chargers.
Again, we will go back to our partners and we'll provide them with that input. We were told chargers here in August in the board parking area, and then the rest of them will follow shortly before the end of the year. So we're still tracking to that timeline, but I think we can get an update for the board if that's what you'd like. If that would be the direction of the chair?
Yes, that would be the direction of the chair.
Okay. So why don't we do that? We'll come back to the either this committee or the full board with an update on where we are with those chargers.
And if there are any concerns or delays, we'd like those identified so that we, maybe from our end as policymakers, can speak with folks to make sure that gets accomplished.
Thank you.
Can you tell me what is holding it up? I mean, this is not rocket science.
I would say that there have been other...
They have done major electrical upgrades in this building. Major.
Yes.
Major. I mean, they have taken this building off a grid and put it on another grid.
Yes.
And they can't hook up electrical chargers.
I think that effort was... more substantial than maybe folks actually realize. And we've continued to have some issues with our electrical system in the building itself. So those have kind of taken priority, like keeping the data center up and doing repairs around that, as far as I understand it. And they have gone through a bid process now for these chargers. Contracts have been signed. So we're assuming that they're sticking to the timeline that they've given us.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, hopefully you'll forward our displeasure to Jack.
Absolutely.
And Jack will forward his displeasure to Steve, and Steve will do something.
We'll make sure that gets relayed.
And again, as part of that report, any barriers that are continuing to create any impact for not moving forward. Mr. Hudson?
Yeah, I know he's kind of hiding down there in the corner too, but I think we also need to expand this to, the city and the county. Is there anything they can do, a request or something for street parking for electrical, or any possibilities to do other than just what's inside the building for electrical recharging, or our Bryant position, or something around here where jointly? I mean, I think the position you're getting here is sooner than later because infrastructure. I mean, I go back at ABAC when Mark Green was begging about at least a plan.
Yeah.
We can't sell electric cars and if you don't have the charging. And we're talking about, I think in one of those reports, additional 247,000 electric vehicles by 2025. Well, they got to charge somewhere. And I mean, somehow it's got to get coordinated between the counties or the cities with what's coming.
Okay.
Well, I think we'll leave that up to our friends. And no, I mean, they're a separate jurisdiction, and I believe, you know, if we would like to hear...
We should be able to take care of this ourselves.
Okay. Well, no, I don't mean about this, but relative to Mr. Hudson's request, I think it's up to Mr. Dew and his colleagues to... they've got their own plan. I don't want us to be the heavy hand.
Oh, no. I mean, we'd be happy to talk about what we're doing in the city as far as electric vehicle rollout citywide. But as it pertains to this one, this is more of a building site-specific issue.
But he's talking
here.
About the street.
But I agree. Like, if there's interest by the folks here in wanting to install a charging station, I'd be happy to work with them on making that happen.
Very good.
I think along the lines of some of the questions that have already come out here, I think the presentation today is going to be... I think it really speaks to some of those questions, and you can see that infrastructure is coming, and it's coming from a number of different areas. So I think we should take back your comments, and we will make sure that this comes back to this committee as an item.
Okay, before the report, Mr. Canepa.
Hey, Damien, this seems to be an issue. This was addressed in January at our retreat. And it just doesn't seem, there were several board members that have raised this, and it doesn't seem that there's progress. And I think we really got to kind of step up our game on this, okay? We really have to do that. If you could talk to Mr. Broadband, I think Scott was correct. If it's a Steve Heminger issue, then let's deal with that. But we should have electric charging stations. We are the Bay Area Air Quality Management District, and they are the MTC, and they are ABAG, right? So... thank you.
Thank you. All right, Ms. Skolnick.
Welcome.
Great. Thank you so much. I'm really pleased to provide this update on the region's progress in deploying EVs. All right, so in this presentation, I'll be providing background on the need for electrification of the transportation sector, also be reviewing the Air District's planning efforts, the goals that have been set for electric vehicle adoption, and the funding that the Air District has invested over the past 5 years, along with some of the results from those investments. And also, now that this technology is becoming more mature, in addition to the Air District's funding, we're seeing a lot of new commitment from others, including the private and public sectors. So I'll be discussing some of those efforts as well, and then concluding with the Air District's next steps. So for background, there's over 5.5 million vehicles that are registered to Bay Area drivers. And these vehicles represent a significant source of air pollution in our region. Over 40% of our criteria pollutants are from these vehicles, as well as contributing over 36% of greenhouse gases in the region.
I think Mr. You were looking in. I thought you were going to have a comment.
What we've done here is just show our the Air District's care areas, which are shown in purple here on this map. And what we know is that specifically diesel particulate matter, our PM emissions, disproportionately impact folks that are closest to roadways, which is where those emissions generally occur. And so, of course, we see that those roadways also coincide with our carriers. So for that reason, the Air District focuses a significant portion of its funding and also its outreach on efforts to help reduce emissions from our roadways and help to improve air quality in the region. So beginning in 2010, 2011, we learned that the Nissan Leaf was going to be introduced as a new electric vehicle, the first to make it to the market. Tesla's Roadster was kind of a not necessarily a brand new vehicle. It was using the Lotus platform, but the Leaf was really from the ground up a brand new vehicle. And we learned that that vehicle was coming, so we began the process of doing a lot of planning for mass adoption of electric vehicles in our region. So here on the left-hand side, we see a screenshot of the Air District's plug-in electric vehicle readiness plan, which was adopted by this board back in December of 2013. This plan does a lot of work to help identify the barriers to EV adoption, both in the light and heavy-duty sector, and develop strategies for helping to work through those to help accelerate adoption in the region. It also sets what we thought at the time, again, we were doing this work back in 2011 and 12, what we thought were ambitious adoption goals. So through the planning, we developed a goal of 110,000 electric vehicles on the road by 2020 and almost a quarter million by 2025. To put that in perspective, again, in 2011, I think there were probably about 2,000 vehicles that were sold, electric vehicles that were sold. So we knew these were very ambitious goals at the time. And now with the adoption of the Bay Area's Clean Air Plan, we have even more ambitious goals of approximately 90% of the fleet needs to be electrified by 2050, and probably that means about 100% of the light-duty sector. But again, very ambitious goals through this planning. So in terms of what we've done so far, over the past 5 or 6 years, the Air District has invested over $60 million. About $17 million of that has gone to the light-duty sector through plug-in electric vehicles and charging infrastructure. So we were one of the early investors in light-duty and home chargers back in 2011 through 12 when we participated in the EV project, which was a national study. We also have done more local solicitations, which, again, this past year deployed nearly 1,000 charging stations throughout the Bay Area. So a lot of work that has gone into this and more with every passing year. But in the last couple years also, we've been able to start making some investments in other kinds of parts of the transportation sector, including the heavy-duty sector and some off-road equipment. We've made significant investments over the past few years in shore power at the Port of Oakland, and also in the last couple years was able to fund projects at airports to fund ground support equipment. Also, we have a couple programs that have run to replace diesel lawn and garden equipment, and also funding for Caltrain, which I'm very pleased to say, yes, has recently been approved by the federal government. And so that program is going to go forward, which is really going to be an amazing program once that's implemented over the next few years. So one thing I do want to say just on this, I'll talk about it a little bit here. So in terms of adoption of vehicles, this chart shows a couple different things. It reminds us of our short-term goals, which were 110,000 cars by plug-in electric vehicles by 2020 and a quarter million by 2025. Then what we see are the bar charts. The blue and orange portion represent California and the Bay Area, respectively. So the blue portion, the top of that table or chart shows the number of cars deployed in California. The orange portion is the estimated number of cars deployed, new plug-in electric vehicles deployed in the Bay Area. What we see here is that nearly 40% of the plug-in electric vehicles deployed in California have been deployed in the Bay Area, even though we only represent about 17% of the population. So in terms of the state meeting its goals, we see the state goal of 1.5 million by 2025, and yet they're only slightly at above 200,000. So the state has quite a ways to go. On the other hand, in terms of our own 2020 goal, we see that we have almost 90,000 vehicles deployed as of the end of 2016. So we are definitely making very good progress to meet our 2020 goal. And we believe with the investments that the board has made authorized for over the next few years, we're feeling very positive about meeting our other interim goals for 2025, our quarter of a million vehicles by 2025. again, in order to make the 2050 goal, given that we still only have less than 2% of the fleet being a plug-in electric vehicle, we have quite a ways to go, but we are very encouraged by this early start. On the Bay Area public charging network, we see kind of similar positive, hopeful results that still need a ways to go. So what we see is that nearly 24% of the charging stations that have been deployed, publicly available charging stations in the Bay Area, have received funding from this district. But with 4,400 public stations, while that sounds like a lot, in terms of, we had some of the discussion earlier before this presentation, it's not nearly enough to meet even the vehicles that we have on the road today, let alone the vehicles that are coming in the future. So, again, we're really encouraged by the effort and the results so far, but in order to meet our clean air goals, we realize that we have quite a ways to go. In order to help us get there in terms of what the Air District will be doing, we're going to continue to have funding for infrastructure and vehicles, as well as some other kinds of projects to help support deployment of these. What we've shown here on the left is a chart of the funding that we have available through June of 2018. So we're showing really essentially 2 years of TFCA funding, and you see how the board has authorized the allocation of those funds. So we have more than a quarter of the funding going to trip reduction and bicycles and other kinds of efforts to get folks off the road. And on the right-hand side, we've seen our clean air vehicle funding, which shows $27 million available between this and next year to support infrastructure and vehicles. So we're going to continue to do similar programs as we've done, where we have multi-year solicitations or longer solicitations. We currently have funding available for electric vehicle charging stations. We're in the process of developing a new solicitation to provide funding to light and heavy-duty fleets. That'll open in the next couple of months, and then pending approval of the change in the policies, we'll be able to just leave that open for the next year so that folks, fleets can apply for that funding when they're ready to and move forward with their projects and be successful. So, again, we're really excited about having this funding so we can continue moving forward with accelerated deployment of electric vehicles. And this investment is also going to be supported by significant investments from a lot of other entities. This is just a snapshot of some of the funding that we know about. There is other funding available, but these, I think, really do represent the most significant sources of funding. In a minute, I'm pleased to introduce Jenna Corey, who is the director of the Clean Energy Programs at PG&E, who will be talking about their investment. There's also funding from a VW settlement, which I'll be discussing later in this presentation. Today, we've discussed previously funding that's available through the Air Resources Board and the California Energy Commission through cap and trade, so I won't really be covering that today specifically, but we're happy to provide information. But again, I do want to provide that as a reminder that that is also going to be a significant source of funding that will help our region as well as the rest of the state to meet its deployment goals. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Jenna Corey, who will be sharing with us some very exciting developments from PG&E, both a program that they're going to be deploying later this year, as well as some information about programs that are in the works.
Thank you, Karen, and thank you, Commission?
Committee.
Board?
Folks.
Air Board? Folks?
We're wonderful, friendly people. Even
okay, excellent. That's great. First of all, let me just say our partnership, PG&E's partnership with the Air Board, has been really fantastic, and we're all in this particular mission together. And so what you see, what I'd like to talk about today is our part, but I wanted to just take a minute and talk generally about some of the research that we've done where customers express an opinion about adoption for electric vehicles and what we, the collective state policymakers and utilities, are doing to address those things. So first question, first thing you hear from customers in the early years was there's not any choice. And Karen referred to the Nissan Leaf, which was the first vehicle really mass produced for this market. In 2011, there were 4 vehicles available to people to select. And today, 2017, just a few years later, we have over 40 models available to consumers to select from. So the selection is really, really right where it should be. The second thing is the cost of the vehicles. They've been, they have not been at parity. They've been an incremental cost. So with the federal tax incentives, the state California vehicle rebate program, and then local area incentives, that has given, made some of the mainstream vehicles at parity with conventional internal combustion engine vehicles. So what we see is really a concerted effort on the part of the state to keep the vehicle rebate program live. And one of the things I wanted to comment on Karen's prior slide, which talked about $695 million over 10 years from cap and trade and the state programs, is that is not assured funding. And so one of the things that we collectively need to do is make our voice heard in Sacramento that those incentives are really critical to keeping this market moving. So I feel like we're moving toward a tipping point. But one of the things we collectively can do is continue to voice our encouragement for continued incentives on the vehicles, because they're not at parity yet, and so we need to continue the incentive programs. The third thing, of course, and the big ticket item is range anxiety. Customers express concern about being stranded. So infrastructure is really the area where a lot of California investment needs to be made. And one of the things that I like to say about PG&E is that is our business. We are in the infrastructure business. So one of our first proposals at the commission 2 years ago, actually, and we've just recently been approved to begin the project, is $130 million worth of infrastructure investment. We've been, our installations have been limited to workplaces and multi-unit dwellings. And what we find from research is that about 80% of EV owners charge in a single-family home garage. And that's great, but we have this enormous market of multi-unit dwellings that are not addressed. And there are extremely complicated issues around tenant, landlord, giving up parking spaces. You know, it's a really thorny space. And so that infrastructure investments in multi-unit dwellings are really behind. So that's an area where we are going to take a crack at that market. By the way, feel free to ask any questions as we go along. Happy to answer.
Doug, I'm sorry, Doug. That's Eric.
I'll take that as a compliment. Doug,
yeah. on the subject of apartment buildings and multi-unit, I mean, we all know that much of the growth that we need for this region is going to be not single-family homes, but apartments and condos. You obviously know about the challenges. Do you feel that's a nut that PGE can help crack with not only new multifamily buildings, but existing buildings that have to be retrofit?
Well, we're going to take our best shot at it. One of the things that this program does is it underwrites the cost of putting in the infrastructure. So we are going to be, and I don't know who's controlling the slides, but if you could move one tick forward. This picture is kind of important, and let me explain to you why it's important to answering your question. There's this term of art in our business right now called make ready, which means we would put in all the utility infrastructure up to the charger and socialize those costs across all PG&E customers. The reason why that's important is because, you know, 75% of the cost is in that piece. So if you're a multi-unit dwelling landlord, a lot of the costs have been defrayed. So we're hoping that makes it much more attractive. The issues of tenant landlord and giving up deeded parking spaces. And let me say that I don't know how we're going to crack that. We're making our best shot at it.
My other question through the chair is, as an electric vehicle driver, I
like everybody else, has range anxiety. And one of the questions I've always had is there anything the Air District here can do to get even faster chargers? Like level 2 charging still takes me 4 hours, so I can top off. But is there anything that's being done to have more, I don't know, level 3 or new technology chargers?
Absolutely. And let me just do a quick finish on this particular project, and then I'm going to answer your question specifically. So our proposal here was to install 7,500 level 2 chargers at workplaces and multi-unit dwellings. We've made a commitment to deploy a number of those in disadvantaged communities. And there's a lot of variance on this. The site host can either own the charger, or we can provide an incentive for supporting the charger if you live in a disadvantaged community or a multi-unit dwelling, which is this commission, the CPUC, has made an observation that this multi-unit dwelling market is extremely difficult. So we will be offering an incentive for the charger as well. So we're making the costs extremely attractive for a multi-unit dwelling. And we will begin our trial sites this fall. And we have an online portal. So the enrollment process is you get online at pge.com/EV charge and express your interest in being a part of this program. Because we're limited to $130 million. It seems like a lot of money, but that's 7,500 chargers is 700 locations. And we have a lot of cities, maybe some of your cities, that have already raised their hand on the portal and said, we are interested. So we will be deploying starting this fall. I would encourage you to get your name in the hopper. It doesn't cost anything. Just get in the queue if you have an interest. And Mr. Haggerty, let me address your concern. If there's anything I can do to help on the PG&E side with support for your building, I don't know who they are in this discussion, so if they includes PG&E, just let me know, and I will do my best to help you out.
I don't know either.
Okay.
We think we know, but somehow that's not working.
Marvelous mystery tour.
I wanted to make another comment on Karen's growth slide, that if you see the growth of EV adoption in the Bay Area and in California, one of the things that's I think is really exciting about this is gas prices have just gone through the floor, and you do not see a huge slowdown. So I think that's very promising. And also the percent of new vehicles that are sold in some of the counties are as high as 10%. So we really, the Bay Area is obviously leading the way. So that's, I find that to be really gratifying and exciting. Okay. One other comment I would make about the light duty market. Maybe some of you are aware of the low carbon fuel standard component as part of cap and trade. And PG&E, Edison in San Diego also, but PG&E is offering a rebate for clean fuel use. So right now, if you are driving an EV, Mr. Kim, 5 minutes online, upload your, if you haven't already, it's $500 rebate. It takes you 5 minutes, upload your registration. As long as you're a PG&E customer, yeah, you would be. Santa too. Sorry.
Same website?
Yeah, you can get on PG&E/EV and it'll put you into the, it's called the Clean Fuel Rebate. And it literally will take you 5 minutes. It might take you a month to get your check, but and the only reason is because we had estimated how many rebate applications we would get, and we thought we'd get like 300 a month or something. The first month we got like 7,000. So it's the rebate is being actively. We've now had over 30,000 people apply for the rebate. Clean fuel rebate is what it's called. I don't know how much time I have, so I'm just
going to keep going.
We're
very interested.
Okay, very good. So really, Mr. Kim, to your question, when we looked at the market, we said, okay, the light duty market, the vehicles are there, the infrastructure, we've got a plan for that. The state is really going gung-ho on that. Really, the next big nut to crack is the medium and heavy duty. And the real issue with the medium and heavy duty is a couple things. One is the equipment, the technology is not yet quite there. And the people that are really moving that market are the transit agencies. So BYD, which is a big Chinese manufacturer, Proterra, which is right here in, I believe, San Mateo County, they are building special purpose vehicles, these big, huge transit buses, and they're fantastic. And if you get a chance to go see one or ride in one, they're beautiful, they're quiet, they have over 300 miles of range on an electric charge. They are moving the transit market. And what's so beautiful about that is not only are they demonstrating the equipment, the technology works, they're serving underserved markets, and the truck platforms are going to be based on the bus platform technology. So it's going to move the technology through the value chain. So we're very excited about that.
I'd also add that our region's major bus manufacturer, Gillig, is also now involved in production of these vehicles, and they will offer on their current platform, like any standard bus, the option for you to do natural gas, hybrid electric, and any of those other solutions that you want. So we try not to do commercials here, so just to keep the playing field level. There are a number of manufacturers in this area, and as our representative from PG&E here points out, this will be the basis for the truck market. So it's exciting. And one thing I wanted to add on Mr. Kim, you'd mentioned we have deployed 53 DC fast chargers, which will charge your vehicle much faster. But we're also in our next round looking at, with some friends of ours from Europe, some superchargers, which is 150. This will probably give the PG&E folks a little bit of pause, but, 130 to 150 kilowatt chargers, and those will charge your vehicles significantly faster. And that's where it appears a lot of the European manufacturers want to go with their vehicles. So we're keeping a close eye on it. And I think as we come back to you with projects for approval over the next granting period, you're going to see much more of those projects come through.
Yeah, if I might add one other point on the DC fast charger, we think that might be the silver bullet for multi-unit dwellings. If you could put a plaza of fast chargers near an area that has a lot of multi-unit dwellings, that would be, because the charging is very quick, you're able to pull in, sit there for 20 minutes, your car's charged up, and then you go park in your parking garage. So we think we're gonna make a run at that. This is the last slide that I want to talk about. And because we recognize that the medium and heavy duty market is really important, not just from a greenhouse gas emissions perspective, but from a particulate matter and a NOx emissions reduction matter, we elected to propose to the commission that PG&E underwrite the infrastructure for charging for all medium and duty and heavy duty electric vehicles. So on the left, Fleet Ready is our $211 million proposal. That's what we think it'll cost over the next 5 years to support all electric vehicle adoption in the medium and heavy duty space. That includes off-road, like idle reduction technologies, outdoor forklifts, anything that comes to market, we will underwrite the cost of the infrastructure. And that's a huge savings if you are putting together your business plan for investment. Did you have a question, Mr. Hudson?
I want to make sure, Karen made part of the presentation. You have done the PG&E. Did Rebecca, did you have a question so far?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Cool, thank you. And thank you so much for this program and for coming to present. I'm very much aware in Oakland, where I'm elected, that we have a very significant problem of the multifamily residential not having the chargers. We recently actually adopted a requirement in new construction of multifamily residential that they be made ready. I mean, maybe not exactly what you mean by make ready, but that they be capable of
right.
of having them. And so that should help. But I would be really interested in collaborating on how we make sure that your program reaches folks. And so are you doing direct outreach to landlords or property owners or landlord associations, things like that, so that multifamily residential that could take advantage of your program will know about it? Or do you have stuff that you could give us that we could pass on to multifamily residential property owners?
So we will definitely have collateral that you can pass on, and we have a full outreach plan, but we just got approval for the light duty project. So right now we aren't actually doing active outreach. We have over 200 cities and built and companies that have come in through our portal without any marketing. So you people like yourselves will hear about this and get your cities in the queue. We will be doing outreach to some of the big real estate.
Awesome. And then in terms of the medium-sized trucks, I also think that is a really exciting. It's turning off by itself.
Yes,
anyway,
it is.
I think that that's a really exciting opportunity because, as mentioned, that also will reduce significantly particulate matter even more than doing it with cars. And, you know, we have a UPS and FedEx facilities near the Oakland airport, which would be great opportunities. And are you reaching out to folks like that already? Or yeah.
Seems to have a mind of its own. Yes, we are actually actively discussing the whole market space with these fleet, last mile delivery fleets, because they are interested. And we are interested. And if we can support the infrastructure, that seems to be. And I was really gratified by Karen's comment about the heavy duty program that you all are contemplating, because we need, you know, the federal government does support heavy duty transit. So if people can bring money to the vehicles and we're bringing money to the infrastructure, that's a pretty good marriage. And we are trying to be complementary in our investment plans.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And I think also the deployment of more of the fast charge stations will also help with adoption. I also drive an electric car, and yeah, it's like if you could do your trip out somewhere in the region and then not back if you don't have charging.
That's right.
So I do think that that'll be really helpful. There's also been some preliminary discussions about AC transit potential for electric buses, probably first for the Broadway shuttle corridor. So we'll probably be needing to hit you up around that, because that's going to need a very heavy-duty charger to do fast inline charging for buses. But
yes, and you'll see our second portion of this proposal is for fast charging. And we're talking about, one of the things that we've noticed is this plaza model seems to be more attractive. It's easier to site these if you put them co-located, but it does create a huge power draw. A year ago, 50 kW was a fast charger, and Tesla came in and put in 120 kW chargers, and everybody got all jazzed up about that. And then 350 kW was launched this last year, and that's just mind-blowing. The transit agencies have 500 kW. So you can see this is over the last 18 months, this is an evolving space. And one of the things that we're trying to do is figure out, how do we serve those heavy, heavy loads? They're very spiky, so we have to serve the whole 500 or 350, and if it's a plaza. So,
well, definitely, anyway, I'll come get your card or something after.
Please do.
Because I do think that we could actually get more of them distributed into apartment buildings if we had an effective communication strategy to reach those building owners and sufficiently explain to them why it's good, so that you wouldn't get such spiky, concentrated loads. And
right.
People, if in their own apartment building, they level two is fine because
they're
hanging out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you.
Sure.
Dave's next, but Tyrone, did you just have a question in response? Or?
A question and also a question for staff,
okay.
Too.
Well, then yeah. I saw Dave there. So
go ahead. Let him.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks. So I think everyone's been touching kind of on the issue of, we have our existing buildings and then we have our new buildings. San Francisco is happy to work with Oakland and also Fremont in kind of passing our own kind of EV-ready ordinance for new building construction. And, you know, one of one of the purposes of that program was actually to develop kind of policies that could be implemented in other cities. So what I wanted to offer to staff was part of our climate action plan was actually to expand this out in the region because it's a regional transportation model and charging infrastructure that we're going to need in order to facilitate this adoption. And then on the other hand, with PG&E, especially because you're bringing money to the table now with cities that are starting to have these ordinances online, those are like the lowest hanging fruit for you because these buildings are already going to have the infrastructure in there for the charging stations. What they won't have, and maybe the developer may not have, is information about this rebate and incentive you're offering on top of the other incentives to put those charging installs in now rather than waiting, because many of the ordinances just require the infrastructure without the charging station itself. Mm-hmm. But if they knew that there was an incentive that might be only available for a short period of time, this would help to drive that adoption further. So I wanted to encourage you to kind of like sync up with the cities that have these EV-ready ordinances and also to do outreach to those developments because they're all like very dense developments that are occurring within these locations and then make sure the incentive is known to them.
Yeah, that's great. And definitely getting the word out is going to be important. We're just, at this point, we haven't had we're going to put our trial sites in. We're looking for 10 trial sites. And we have some very good candidates. I believe one of them is in Alameda County.
Oh.
I'm not sure.
Well, there's 9 counties. You might think about putting one in each county and maybe two.
Two in ours.
In the more populous ones. I think that might go a long ways towards doing things as opposed to everybody in one county. That would be my suggestion.
Okay. Can I make one other?
Sure.
I just wanted to give you the last little piece of this, and then I'm just happy to stay here as long as you have questions. We also have been put $20 million against what we call priority review projects that we expect to be approved this year. And one of the, we want to put some information on our website. So if you buy an electric vehicle and you go, what now? You can get on there and see who does these kind of installations. What are the choices of chargers for your home or whatever? So an information tool set, basically. We're going to do some demonstration projects in the medium duty, heavy duty, and idle reduction program. And then we also have an interest in doing a school bus over generation demonstration. So you might be aware that we have certain times a year where we have overgeneration right now in the Central Valley largely. And we want to see, can we plow a bunch of energy into school bus charging? Because it's kind of the right duty cycle. And so we're looking for a partner in the school bus space. We were all excited about Oakland, and then we understand that Oakland doesn't actually use school buses anymore. So that was an interesting, maybe I've got that wrong, but it was an interesting finding. But the last thing is we have this, we're proposing to do an open RFP. We said we live in San Francisco, near Silicon Valley. We have an opportunity for all the genius of this area to come forward with ideas that we could do for projects. They're $4 million each, so we can do 2 or 3, or we can do 8 $1 million projects. We are interested in people's ideas, so we are going to propose this. It's still, this whole thing is live at the CPUC right now. So,
Dave.
Gosh, it keeps adding up here. Starting with the question when you talked about, we've got a bus on the peninsula that's thinking about it. I mean, there must be 8 different companies we can name right now that are thinking about it. Whereas, as far as Karen and I are involved, we got 4 running around right now. They don't plug in. They're wave induction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the things that needs to be looked at where PG&E works back through your council of governments or your cities to have this as a condition of approval for potential for how are you going to charge these electric vehicles, not just cars, that are coming in the future, which goes back to what I just heard from Mr. Kim. Much of the development will be over the next how many years electric. Not much, most. If you look at One Bay Area through 2025, we're talking about 85% of the growth within priority development areas. Once again, you have to look at conditions of approval because to me, what people forget is when you switch from a power source of fossil fuel to electric, you're talking about demand. Can you imagine we have a demand through the ISO of something like 50,000 megawatts an hour in August, and all of a sudden it jumps up and you don't have the power to meet that?
Because you're right.
Nope. Is that an indicator of how I'm doing so
no.
far?
I think after four on, but, it kicks off.
I'm going to ignore them. The reality check here is where we have a problem is not that we need to do faster charging necessarily. We need to do the correct charging. I'm hearing about multifamily finding a place to charge them. Doesn't happen that way. People are charging up for a day. They have the charge to work for a day primarily, and it's when you're home or overnight that you are parked and you have to charge the thing. If you think you're going to go into a multifamily, put three or four of these chargers where people are going to charge up, that's not going to happen. The idea is, how are you going to have something for each one of these facilities that can show that you can meet the demand? And I think that's where you're going back to the cities. You can have the slowest charger in the world if you have the possibility of every one of these parking spaces have it. You're not going to do it in San Francisco. I don't think you're going to have enough parking for a car in every single multifamily that's coming up, but you do have the potential out in more of the suburban areas to do something like that. There was something. You said you're going into the infrastructure business. It would be interesting to see in future reports what that pertains to. My biggest concern is you switch over to electric and you don't have the infrastructure, the lines to get into where it is produced. In other words, you can set up a ton of solar arrays, but if it doesn't get to where the lines are back through a Los Medanos or wherever the power plant is that has the responsibility of making sure here's this constant output for the facilities that need it, then, you know, we're still going to have rolling brownouts or blackouts or whatever it is. And my worst nightmare is your power goes down overnight and you've got this thing ready to charge and you're at 12%. You get up the next day, it's at 11. You're not going to work.
So I really appreciate your comments. And needless to say, we are extremely concerned that we are ready for this this transition of our transportation system over to electric. We're looking at how can we modify the charging? How can we use storage as a possible backup? We've got research and development trials to try and pair up solar storage and charging infrastructure. In fact, we're doing a partnership with a ride-sharing company right now to see if we can put storage, ride-sharing, and electrics all together. So we're well aware that reliability is crucial. It's crucial today, and it will be even more crucial as we electrify our transportation system.
One thing I would add is, you know, in the studies that we did as part of our plan, we looked at what EPRI and some others had produced for, you know, our main grid. And there's good news and there's bad news, right? I mean, we need to go to almost 100% zero emissions in both San Joaquin and South Coast, which means basically the entire state, including ourselves. That's a lot of vehicles, right? But in the short term, at least, the grid, as it stands now, can support an additional 3 million vehicles. This is EPRI, not us. So we have quite a bit of roadmap before we get to those points where we're starting to have issues. And there's one thing that I would say is the technology on board the vehicles and the charging itself continues to get smarter. So a lot of the research is going into, you know, peak shaving, which means that, you know, you don't want to have instantaneous loads for 50, you know, electric vehicles all coming on at once when we've got a huge demand on the grid. So would you, if you were charging and you needed your X amount of charge in your vehicle, you don't care how it gets there, you just need the charge that you need. It's like your refrigerator. Your refrigerator isn't on all the time. It cycles, you know, 6 times, 8 times in an hour. So By being able to control some of that, you start to deal with some of the issues that you're talking about, and it's healthier for the grid, better for the vehicle itself, better for the battery. So some of those technology advancements will also, I think, lead us to a point where our current grid will be able to support even more of these vehicles without us needing to do major upgrades. But at some point in the future, you get to the point where all of this stuff becomes into play. Mm-hmm. So relative to California's adoption rate for electric vehicles by 2020, by 2030, we're looking at 15.4% of our total fleet being fully electric. Following that point, I think, is when you're going to see the major jump up in demands for these vehicles. So good news and bad news. We've got a bit of runway to figure some of these things out, but they will need to get figured out eventually.
Final specific question.
Okay. Yep.
Dave, real quick, because we've got more presentation.
The program for school busing, and this is where I run into a problem. My county has a half-cent sales tax that we voted on. Part of the money goes to a program designed for congestion relief for schools. It's school busing. But it isn't, I mean, we use the same buses and everything, but we're not a school district running the whole thing. We are a separate board that elects to do this. And we've got 19 buses, and we're coming around to redo it. Would your program fit into that to use some electric buses instead of buying more diesel, whatever's?
Our program certainly will. So the board recently approved funding for school buses, $5 million, and electric buses are eligible as part of that.
Okay. I would also, one other add on that is, and I don't think Karen mentioned this, but the VW money that
we're getting to that.
Along. There's an incremental $380 million in addition to the $800 million for infrastructure that's going for emissions reduction. And I know Chair Nichols has articulated publicly that she's very interested in deploying some of that in the school bus arena. And yes, your project would be available in our program when it gets approved.
Doug?
Oh, I'm sorry. Nothing gets this committee worked up more than electric vehicles. That's pretty clear. I want to just echo what Rebecca had said, because heavy-duty vehicles, medium-duty vehicles are the big nut that we have to crack, and I'm thrilled to hear that public transit is sort of at the leading edge of that. I really hope that we are reaching out to two companies that I think are in our area that can help to move that needle more. So, as you said, Proterra is a local company in Burlingame. They make electric buses. I hope we are talking to them about their role in trying to push technology beyond transit and into other areas. And then Gillig makes buses. They are now in Livermore, but they're in Alameda County, another major company that hasn't invested in electric. Are they investing electric?
Very much so.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Very pro-electric.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay. Let's finish the presentation. We will have committee member comments. I have a question myself, but Karen, let's finish the presentation.
Great. Thank you. So just to kind of summarize from Jana's presentation, just to clarify that their light-duty network program is going to launch later this year, but they are taking hand raisings in case somebody is interested, so we can send that link out to everyone. These other programs that she discussed, they are currently proposed, they are being reviewed by the CPUC, and we hope that they will be approved, in which case they would be available in the next few years. But this gives you some idea about what they're thinking. And this slide shows you what other utilities are doing throughout the state. What's really exciting is that while the Bay Area is a leader in EV, part of our future success will be dependent on others joining along and making their own investments. So we see significant investments in Southern California as well through Southern California Edison and San Diego Gas and Electric, who have slightly different kinds of programs that they're rolling out to complement PG&E's effort. And so going forward, we can come back and provide information on the results of these. I know there were some questions about how is it going to work with multifamily dwelling. Again, these different investments will show different strategies for deploying EV in workplaces and in multifamily dwelling. And so not just from PG&E, but from throughout the investments throughout the state, we'll be able to learn which kinds of approaches work best so that we can continue to improve here in the Bay Area as we move forward. In addition to PG&E, another thing we'd like to touch on very quickly is the funding from Volkswagen. As many of you are aware, there was a suit related to the diesel emissions cheating scandal. The silver lining in all of this is that a significant amount of funding has been brought forward through this program. It's called the Volkswagen Electrify America program. It's a $2 billion program. With $800 million of that will go to California specifically. It's going to be rolled out over the next 10 years in four different cycles, and we're getting ready to roll out, well, they're getting ready to roll out cycle number one. So it hasn't completely been finalized, but what we've learned so far from what they will be doing is a significant amount of their funding will go into fortifying redoubling the state's infrastructure charging network. One thing we're really excited about is, and I think this was a question that Director Kim or someone else had asked, was that a portion of that funding, some of it will go just for charging, regular level 2 or DC fast charging. But they're also going to begin the process of building plazas for this super fast charging, so the 150, the 350 kilowatt super fast chargers that were discussed earlier. The cars for this technology don't exist yet, but they're in the process of being built. So these are cars that are going to launch in 2018. And again, this funding is going to take a while to roll out. So the idea is that by the time the cars are available, the funding will be available and the infrastructure will be available. So it's really exciting. One thing that is a little bit, I don't know if we should be delighted or flattered or disappointed, is the Air District. Actually, we do want to let you know that we had submitted a proposal for a $150 million program along with San Joaquin and South Coast regions, so $50 million for each region to do exactly what I just told you. We are still working to understand whether the Air District will have a role or what our role might be. But at the very least, we're extremely excited that VW will be making this investment, and they have already informed us that two of the five areas that they will be concentrating funds in are what they call the San Francisco metropolitan region and the San Jose metropolitan region. So we understand that as the Bay Area region, and so we will certainly be working with VW and Air Resources Board to help to coordinate those investments.
That includes the East Bay?
That's what we're going to be, we have written them numerous letters to help them to clarify that is what it means, and also to help them to cite those chargers in the right locations as well.
I think the other thing, the point that needs to be made there is, even if it doesn't include those communities, there are still three more rounds of this to go. So we expect that eventually all of our communities will be served by this. But as Karen said, we're looking for clarification, and it's the policy of this agency that it should be region-wide.
And I'm just thinking, because Volkswagen has the black eye, that they should be very flexible in what we define as our region.
Yes. And in our proposal,
one would think
good. So we mentioned that's the first round of funding. As I mentioned, there's going to be three more rounds of funding. And while we don't know exactly what they'll be proposing, some of that has been discussed here, but we're very encouraged that in those future rounds of funding, they are definitely looking at medium and heavy duty vehicles and infrastructure. And again, I think part of why they're front loading the light duty portion is because that really is where the technology is really fully mature and sort of cost effective, whereas the other technologies are still being worked out. But by the time they get their funding in place, we should have a lot of good options for them for making good investments in those other areas. Just in terms of next steps, as I mentioned before, we are prepared to increase our own effort to ensure that the region reach our interim and our 2050 goals. I mentioned earlier that the Board of Directors has allocated significant TFCA funding for this effort, so we have over $27 million for this and next year to help leverage the funding that we've talked about from other folks, both the public and the private sector. Where we're going to be focusing our effort again is really on, in addition to our light-duty fleets, trying to see what kinds of heavy-duty equipment we can also continue to try to electrify. In terms of infrastructure, we're going to go back to workplaces and multifamily dwellings and really work on those. We will be coordinating with PG&E and others as their programs open up so that, we can really leverage our funds and really maximize our effort. We also are really excited. We've heard a lot from transit agencies who are interested in not only electrifying their own fleets, but also providing parking for folks that go through on those trains and buses. And so park and rides and different things like that, we think that we'll be able to make a lot of progress there this year. And then the other part of that is the faster charging network that we've talked about. We're also going to begin work on that later this year. And so, again, the idea is that we'll have chargers available by the time those cars deploy. And again, there's a lot of education and outreach. Director Jute mentioned that his city has completed some local ordinances. I know a lot of work has been done by many of the other jurisdictions, Contra Costa County, for example, and others. So I just want to let you guys know again that we have the EV Coordinating Council, which all of your cities and counties are a part of that. We meet two or three times a year. We're going to be meeting again on June 8th here in this building. Last time we specifically talked about ordinances that are being developed by local government, but we discuss a lot of readiness topics. And so, again, the point is to help cities and counties to really be prepared to help do the work for helping to accelerate deployment of electric vehicles in their communities. And finally, again, just to make the point that we've heard from PG&E, we're going to be working with them and also Volkswagen along with the state and pretty much anyone else that we can to help, again, leverage our own funding, the funding that is approved by this board, and to help really further those dollars so that we can really, again, not only meet our goals, but have a really awesome experience for all EV drivers as soon as possible. So anyway, that concludes my presentation, and we'd be very glad to answer any additional questions.
Rebecca, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you. First of all, absolutely we should confirm that when they say San Francisco area, that they don't just mean within San Francisco. I can't imagine they could, because the data on where the pollution has harmed communities wouldn't allow that. And normally when people say that, they're referring to what the federal government defines as the metropolitan statistical area. So I do think let's verify that that's what they mean and tell them that that's what they mean if necessary. I would encourage that if we're having a hand in the development of these charging plazas, that they not be designed to only accommodate the newer electric cars, but that anything we would produce would include both options, because the folks who've already bought their electric cars that don't have the newer charging should also be able to use these plazas if we have a hand in them. And I would just note one... I hate to say anything negative about electric vehicles because I know they're so important, but one thing I think we're going to need to look at is that right now one of the major incentives for purchasing an electric vehicle in the Bay Area is that you get to go in the carpool lane on the bridges and such, and that's part of why there's been such a high rate of electric vehicle adoption in the Bay Area is people are using them to get the carpool lane for their commute. And at a certain point in this chart of growing number of electric vehicles, if we still let all the electric vehicles go with one person in the carpool lane, the carpool lanes will stop working as carpool lanes. And so I would just, not that we'd solve that today, I just think that's something we need to have on our agenda, because we also want carpooling to work, and it won't work if 90% of, anyway.
That's MTC's issue.
And I think we're quite a ways away from that.
Yeah, and I don't think, and I don't think that we're anywhere near that problem yet. And I also just wanted to reiterate continuing to work with the transit agencies and the fleets of medium and heavy duty vehicles, I think, is a great opportunity to get a lot of bang for our buck in terms of particulate matter reduction and things like that. And I just had to, of course, take the opportunity to say Caltrain electrification, how awesome. And, you know, just to share, one of the things we sometimes talk about here is, you know, stronger regional collaboration. And I just wanted to share with folks that when the board members of the Alameda County Transportation Commission went to Washington, D.C. to lobby for a bunch of things, in every meeting we had, we also brought up Caltrain electrification, even though it's not in our jurisdiction. So let's keep building regional allyship. Thanks.
Dave?
I just need a 10-second answer to this. I don't want to take too much of the board's time. Does the federal government have to approve any of this? Does this have to go through Scott Pruitt's?
No.
So this is just all through the state. So there's nothing that the EPA has to approve?
Correct. All of the funding that's been discussed in this presentation is not overseen by the federal government.
Because my understanding was that once the ARB approved it, then that it would go to the EPA administrator. But you're saying that's not the
initial settlement as part of the Volkswagen, I think, is what you're talking about. There was a specific allocation in there for California that was negotiated by the California Attorney General, and the Air Resources Board are the ones who've got control over that. The only folks who need to affirm that are the courts, not the administrator's office.
Okay, I have. Go ahead, Scott.
Just real quick on slide 5, you had, and you don't need to go back to it. Don't waste your time. But in there was the lawnmower buyback program. Are we going to be doing any more of those?
So I know we're very interested at this point. We haven't specifically identified a new. We've had two different funding sources that we've used for those. They've been extremely successful. So I think we would be looking to try to identify funding for that.
So. To me, it seems like it doesn't. I mean, in the past, I think we've used some sort of fines or something to fund those programs. But I don't understand why we couldn't just use Air District funding to do a project like that. I mean, if I remember right, taking a lawnmower off, I'm trying to remember back, but taking a lawnmower is like taking a mobile source off the road, like driving to LA or something like that. I think it's a statistic. So it seems to me we would want to be taking as many electric or as many gas lawnmowers out of service as possible, and especially with the advancements of the electric lawnmowers now, there's been tremendous advancement. People seem to be more wanting to do them. You know, you don't have to really plug in anymore. Now they've actually gone to the battery technology. It seems to me that we should look at that and try to come out with a relatively robust program here. And if we have to use some of Air District's healthy, I don't want to say reserves, but I don't want to say reserves, but we do have money that we could use. And why don't we do it? Why do we have to wait till we find some sort of fine to apply?
I don't think that we do need to wait. We are looking at that as part of our Carol Moyer program. The programs themselves are fairly large, and they're difficult to get off the ground for us, and we generally do them in spaces of about 2-year segments. So the last one we had was about 2 years ago. I think Director Hudson attended and got his lawnmower replaced at that one. But we are looking at to do it again. Well, one of the issues that we had in the last round was that it took us quite a while to get a lawnmower company on board to actually to give us a technology that was robust enough to actually bring to the public. As you said, there's been some changes. So we're at the moment, we're investigating that particular thing.
Why can't we partner with like Lowe's or Home Depot or somebody and do it in the parking lot like we've done in the past?
We absolutely can. The issue is that we tried on several occasions, I think you might remember this, to get a contract in place with Black & Decker and a couple of the other companies, and they would not take the funding from us. So we're in the process, I think, of going back to look at how we might do that again. It's not so much on the, you know, hosting the events and who would host them with us. It's actually getting a technology provider to come in and partner with us to do these things. That's because there's requirements.
Can I just ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
To me, this doesn't seem like, and I'm sorry, I know you all want to get somewhere, but let me just try something. If we got a photocopy machine and printed off 300 of these things that said $100 voucher for your old lawnmower, and we went to Lowe's and said, look, we're going to print off these. Will you honor these today? And so I bring in my gas mower, and it says $100, go in and buy an electric mower. And I go in and I give this to Lowe's, and Lowe's takes $100 off. At the end of the day, they hand me, you know, 300 of these. How does Lowe's get harmed if we give them the money?
It's on,
it doesn't seem like this has to be rocket science.
It's not, and we'll work on to bring something back to the committee on this.
Sounds like we're wonking it to death.
It's the other side of it. It's the mower needs to be drained. The other mower needs to be crushed. It's all of these other things.
We've done
right?
this before, Damien.
Okay, we will come back to you with a program then, and we'll see if we can get that in the next cycle, which is I think coming up in August or so. We'll work on it for you.
And maybe July. We can do it with the folks who crush and melt our cars.
Okay, the chair's going to take some prerogative and ask some questions herself. Along that line, I know when we did the buyback on cars before, there was no requirement as to, they just got some money and the concept was you can go buy a new car, but it wasn't an electric or a hybrid car. I happened to be in Walnut Creek last week, and there's a big Tesla thing, and you know the bright, shiny new car that's the SUV, $82,000 base for that. You know, and I'm going to ask a very uncomfortable, non-PC question. Please don't. I understand why we have disadvantaged communities, but are there studies yet or data that show when you put all this electrification into disadvantaged communities, if people can't afford the car, why are we spending money in the disadvantaged community when it could be used more here? I'm not asking for an answer, but that's something that middle-class people are going to be asking is, how come all this technology may be in poorer areas? And I'm not saying they don't deserve it, but if they can't buy the car, I can't buy the $82,000 car. And so somebody was talking about all the different rebates and tax credits and this and that. They're still out of reach. That's the fair market, you know, I guess I'm sort of complaining, which leads to my next question. Damien, you said by 2030, 15, or Karen may have, that we'll have 15.4% cars electrified. That doesn't seem like very much to me in the next 12 years.
Yeah.
I don't know the answers to those questions, but along with the other mobile sources, I think we need to be really thinking ahead. How can we get more money in the hands of folks who really, if they want to turn in their gas diesel engine car, to go buy an electric car or a hybrid at least, as opposed to, I think, as I understood the last time, and I don't disagree with that. We got clunkers off the road,
yeah.
But it didn't incentivize people, as I recall. And so I'm just saying in this next few cycles or what have you, can we start thinking of this, the carrot,
yes,
to, like Scott was saying, go buy an electric, you don't just get to turn in your thing. That's where I'm going, because
I think we should be trying to get, I mean, 15.4 means, you know, 15 people out of 100.
Yeah.
And I know Bay Area has a higher concentration. That was that a national number or California?
No, we'll do much better than that. That was a target that was set by the California Air Resources Board Clean Car Regulation. So that's a mandatory. I think the Bay Area will do much better than that.
Well, and we're going to do much better if we help people. I'm not saying they go out and buy the $82,000 car.
I've got good news.
Good.
We recently applied, and after 10 years of trying, we have been allowed to now participate in the EFMP Plus Up program, which means that as folks surrender their vehicles, we will be able to give a rebate for those folks to go into either hybrid or full electric or better, more gas-efficient vehicles. And we've submitted our application to the state. We're waiting for approval of that, and that program we hope will roll out when, Karen? Pending approval.
Later this year, early next year.
And yeah. What are we talking about per...
It depends, but I think that the largest incentive is around $5,000.
That's what I would hope, around $5,000.
It really ranges. I just want to clarify, ranges, yeah. This specific program that Damien is mentioning is really designed for low-income people.
Who can't afford to go buy the cars to begin with.
So one of the things that's really fascinating about that program is that it allows them to purchase used vehicles as well. And today you could go buy a used Nissan Leaf for somewhere between $10,000 and $12,000. So with a $5,000 rebate, and there's additional funding for those individuals to also put in charging infrastructure in their home, which we believe that with leverage with PG&E's program, you know, we start to sort of cobble a program where not only can folks who can afford new vehicles that are very expensive deploy these vehicles, but we'll also have options for folks that couldn't before.
That's
afford
fabulous.
These programs.
As long as it's not just one particular group, because I think it's fair to say, even though there are disadvantaged communities in each of our counties and our constituents, when we go back, it's the middle income folks that want to get there. And it's the same with a lot of different programs. They never seem to be able to qualify.
Let us take that as an action item and come back to you. We can talk a little bit about the state's rebate program and give you an idea of who qualifies there, because they've taken the point of requiring some folks who are at the higher end of the mean spectrum to you know, not get those subsidies. But there's quite a range of vehicles in the center, I think, that are, you know, between that, say, 25, 30,000 to 50,000 range.
Well, that's it.
That
I bought a new car 2 years ago and wanted to buy one, but it was 10 grand more. And that was the tipping point that made it impossible. So now I have a diesel car, not diesel, gas combustion. And there's a lot of people out there in that same boat. So thank you for that.
Sure.
All right. Mr. Haggerty.
So I'll be really brief. Actually, I won't be.
Okay, for a second. We're finishing number 6, so I think we're just going to accept that.
No, this is along the lines.
I'm so sorry. I was going to go to committee comments. But
this isn't a committee comment.
Okay.
So it is a comment, but it's along the plug-in technology. In a couple of weeks, I'm doing this car seat giveaway. I'm giving out 500 car seats, and it's targeting low-income families. And I'm partnering with a car dealership, and I told the car dealership, I said, you know, if you want, you could probably bring over some used cars and have them there too, you know, try to sell them while you're there. And he said, you know, he said, I'd rather not do that. He said, I'd rather bring new electric cars, because we're finding that, you know, they're actually in the long run more affordable for the lower income families. He says, however, Scott, you need to know that, you know, that in itself is a problem for the low income families, because we can get them in the cheaper electric vehicles, and then they don't have to pay the gas, which makes the payments even more affordable for them. The problem is a lot of them live in apartments and they don't have the infrastructure. And you need to figure out a way as a government leader to get the infrastructure into these apartments. And so along the lines of what we've been talking about all this morning is we really need to figure out a better way to get the infrastructure in. And I know we've talked about this at the Air Board before, and I think even at one point we had an incentive program that helped put the infrastructure into the apartments. But I think we probably should make a very concentrated effort in trying to target, and this may sound a bit ridiculous, but maybe not, but try to target lower income apartment areas and try to get that infrastructure in, because that really would help them in the long run, because then they could get into these electric vehicles. Just a thought.
It sounds like we've given a lot of direction, so that's good. Can I have a motion to accept the report? Second? I think it was Kaplan and Hudson. Okay, I'm sorry. All those in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye, no opposed, motion carries. With that, any further director comments? Mr. Hudson.
Yeah, on agenda item four, we've got the last sentence, last paragraph, first sentence, per board direction on December 16, 2009, executive officer is authorized to, simply put, go up to 100,000 for grants. It's been 8 years since we've looked at that policy. I'd like to see us take a look at the last meeting. It could be something very simple. Do we want to change it? Do we want to reaffirm it? And then recommend this to the board one way or the other. I mean, it's been 8 years. Just take a look at it.
Anything else? Well, thank you all. It's been a very exciting. We'll make a committee report, but as this continues to roll out, I assume the rest of our board, we may want to do a workshop or some Mr. Broadbent.
Madam Chair, at the risk of keeping you here a little bit longer, I'll give you an update, because I the beauty of being webcast is I can watch you upstairs as I go to my office. On the EV chargers for the building, I can give you a status if you'd like.
We're here in August.
Well, so you got four chargers going in actually next week. They'll be at the
information,
yeah.
You just got thrown under the bus.
Okay.
No, he was just hedging it, I think, making sure, because we're told four, so we tell you August. And so then the RFP for the remainder is going out the following week. So they are moving forward. The four is going to be down at the Beale garage, you know, entrance off of Beale. Ultimately, I think we're trying to shoot for 20 level two, and then ideally a fast charger as well, but the fast charger is likely not till next year.
Of those four charging stations, I see the cars pulling in, they will use them, but as we move forward with further, will that preclude people parking in those spaces if they don't have an electric vehicle? Are they taking up, in other words, spaces for other people? We may need to look at the internal parking policy
right,
on that.
Right. Ideally, what you'd want to do, if we have enough parking, we would stripe it and say EV only.
No, I agree
so,
with that.
But that is something we're talking to them about.
Because I know how many people work in this building.
Well, I'm going to know this. So we have 1,100 now. We're going to go up to 1,400 by the time the BCDC.
And hopefully a lot of them are using public transit. But I'm just saying, because I just think it'll be something we need to look at. All righty. Meeting is adjourned.